This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening on the first day of early voting for the November election. Here on Queer Voices tonight, we're going to be talking about the Women's Music Festival, which happens this Saturday after it's been rescheduled because of the storm earlier. And then in the second hour, JD is doing something very different. It's Queer Girl Group Songs. And these are group songs from the 60s, and JD did a fabulous job of putting this together, and he's even got more on his website, queermusicheritage.com. But first, we go to London and the BBC News.
BBC News with John Jason. Three suicide bombers have carried out a coordinated attack on a hotel complex in the Iraqi capital Baghdad, used by foreign contractors and journalists. About 20 people are believed to have died when the attackers detonated their bombs close to the Palestine and Sheraton hotels. Jim Muir reports from Baghdad.
Just as dusk was settling over the city, it was shaken by three massive explosions in the space of a few minutes as suicide bombers carried out coordinated attacks on the Palestine Hotel compound. The first two were caused by car bombs, the third, much the biggest, by a cement lorry packed with explosives, which was driven through a gap blown in the security wall by one of the cars. Most of those killed and injured were security men, hotel employees, or passers-by hurrying home for the Ramadan sunset meal. The timing seems to have been aimed at causing maximum casualties, and the location at getting maximum media coverage.
Prosecutors in the United States say an alleged drug smuggler accused of links to the Taliban has become the first ever Afghan citizen to be extradited to the U.S. Baz Mohammed is accused of heading an international drug smuggling organization responsible for taking more than $25 million worth of heroin into the United States and other countries. Laura Trevelyan reports from New York.
The prosecution alleged that Mohammed had links to the former Taliban regime in Afghanistan. Mohammed is alleged to have told members of his organization that selling heroin in the U.S. was an act of jihad because they were taking Americans' money for a product that could kill them. Mohammed is charged with controlling opium fields in Afghanistan, processing the opium into heroin and shipping it into the U.S. inside suitcases and clothing. If convicted, Mohammed faces a maximum sentence of life in prison.
A federal judge in the United States has ruled that a confession by a man accused of plotting to kill President Bush is admissible in court, even though his lawyers argue that it was obtained through torture by the Saudi security forces. The defendant, Ahmed Abu Ali, who's a U.S. citizen, is also accused of having links to Al-Qaeda. He's pleaded not guilty to all charges. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The United Nations is launching a global campaign today to help millions of children affected by AIDS. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says children are being overlooked in the fight against the disease. It says a child dies from an AIDS-related illness every minute, but only 5% of children infected with HIV receive medical treatment. The campaign will focus on Africa, the world's worst affected region. Peter Biles reports from Johannesburg.
Every year, more than 600,000 children under 15 are infected, and nearly 90% of them are in sub-Saharan Africa. The UN says children don't have a voice and are missing from the global AIDS agenda. In Africa, for example, fewer than 2% of children with HIV/AIDS are receiving antiretroviral drugs. In some countries in southern Africa, life expectancy has fallen dramatically. Countries with small populations like Botswana and Swaziland are often the most threatened. As a result, the UN is gravely concerned about the number of children becoming orphans.
President Bush has nominated the head of his Council of Economic Advisers, Ben Bernanke, to succeed Alan Greenspan as chairman of the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank. Mr. Bernanke is a former economics professor at Princeton University and served as a member of the Federal Reserve Board before joining the Bush administration earlier this year. Correspondents say his closeness to the president could present difficulties during the Senate confirmation process. Some senators feel he's been too free in appointing his own people to vital positions. But President Bush expects his choice to be a popular one.
He's earned a reputation for intellectual rigor and integrity. He commands deep respect in the global financial community. And he'll be an outstanding chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Hurricane Wilma has lashed the American state of Florida, leaving at least one man dead and causing substantial damage. The area south of the town of Naples on Florida's southwest coast bore the brunt of the storm. But the densely populated cities of Miami and Fort Lauderdale on the other side of the state also suffered structural damage. More than 3 million homes and businesses were without electricity. The storm is now traveling up America's Atlantic coast. The United Nations has warned of a race against time to bring aid to hundreds of thousands of earthquake victims in mountainous regions of northern Pakistan. The UN Humanitarian Office said only 3 weeks remain before the first snowfall of winter, but up to a fifth of those affected by the earthquake has still received no help. 200,000 tents are due to arrive in Pakistan shortly, less than half those needed. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices. And we are here, but we have no Deborah Bell.
Right.
We're bellless.
So this is Jack Falinski.
J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
Because tonight we're going to be doing a long interview with about the Women's Festival coming up this weekend.
The Houston Women's Festival was postponed once, and we're going to do it again. And this is one of the interviews I look forward to most during the year, because I love the music, and it's a great event.
And that scared Deborah Bell off. Boom.
The second hour
is Queer Music Heritage. And as Jack said in the intro, this is a different show. It's not so much a history show or an interview show. I decided just to have fun with it. I went through my collection and got a whole bunch of music that I'm calling queer girl group songs. And what I mean is, you might have guys singing He's So Fine, or My Boyfriend's Back. I have a female group. Instead of singing My Guy, they're singing My Dyke, My Dyke, My Dyke. Better than that.
Today is also the first day of early voting.
And I voted.
And I will vote tomorrow morning, because I didn't have the, even though I should know it intimately, I don't have the push card in front
of me. I took it off the emails that I get all the time from the Pride Committee.
And I didn't quite have my computer set up at home to do that. No, you don't get that from the Pride Committee.
Who do I get it
from? You get that from the caucus.
Oh, would they? I wish they'd quit.
Well, some people aren't as well planned out as you are.
Okay.
If everybody was as well planned out as you were,
it would be a better world.
It would be. If everybody voted. So voting started today, and it goes through like for the next like 12 days. And then the election is on November 8th.
Is there voting on Saturdays? Do you know early voting?
Yes, it starts started today, and it will go through the weekend and through like next Friday.
That's good, because some people have really hard time doing it during the day.
Well, that's what's so neat about early voting. Harris County does a really good job on that. And you can go, actually the best thing to do is go to the caucus website, which is HGLBTPC.org, and that is in Houston, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgendered Political Caucus.org. And they give you, there's a push card there. There's also information about voting. Harris County has a good website about voting, because on early voting, you can vote in one of like 14 different locations throughout the county. Mm-hmm. Go to any one of those.
It's so easy.
It's very easy.
You should really call that the main voting thing, and then the thing that you do on November, whenever it is, that should be like late voting.
That's not a bad idea. Really? That really is not a bad idea, because it's not absentee voting, it is early voting.
I went to the Maori Service Center, and I walked up, no line. Someone said, okay, you vote in this row here, and it's fine.
And besides voting for the mayor, the city controller, which, of course, I believe Anise is unopposed, but I'm not.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty neat. And then city council people, there's a couple other races there, depending on where you live. There's actually even a state rep race out in the east side. The caucus has endorsed many of those positions. And then also there's a bunch of amendments. And amendment number 2 is probably the most important one, because that one, if you vote yes, you're going to add to the Constitution a ban on gay marriage. Now, if you vote no and we prevail, it still will be illegal, but it will not be in the Constitution. And what's real interesting, there's something that was being talked about today that some straight people are saying vote no also because of our legislature writing this amendment so poorly, it may be interpreted that if it passes, that straight marriage may be in jeopardy.
And you know the reason why that is because the wording on the thing says that in Texas, marriage shall be defined as being a union between one man and one woman. Now, it doesn't say which man and which woman, so presumably the first man and woman who get married after it goes into effect, they get married. Nobody else after that can get married.
Well, and that's how smart our legislature is, and maybe that's why they should be worrying more about public education than gay marriage.
Well, that's right. It's like, to hell with the schools. Let's just enshrine bigotry into the Constitution.
Leave no legislature behind.
There you go.
Right. And one of my other favorite thing now is across the street here at KPFT on Lovett Boulevard, the 400 block of Lovett Boulevard.
Has now become a private street.
Yes, that only people who live here can park there, and that goes against the entire grain of this area of town that,
I'm surprised it's legal.
Well, in other cities, they do that.
Hey, they have $400,000 condos. It's their right.
I guess so. So anyway, let's go to News Wrap from this way out.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australia's Defence Force benefits its queer service members' partners. Gay teens aren't unequal in Kansas anymore. And the classic 1950s sex scandal that led to British sodomy law repeal. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out. I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 22nd, 2005. Australia's Defence Force issued a memo on Friday, October 21st, announcing that its gay and lesbian service members will have access to couples' benefits previously available only to heterosexuals. Those benefits will include housing assistance and other family perks, along with death and injury compensation. The government has agreed to changes and to include ADF personnel in interdependent relationships, the memo says. The new group will include ADF members who are involved in interdependent relationships with a same-sex partner. Queer equality groups have been lobbying for this change, which will reportedly go into effect on December 1st, since the ban on gay and lesbian service members was listed in Australia 13 years ago. Finally, if they've seen sense, celebrated Petty Officer Stuart O'Brien, a spokesperson for the Defense Gay and Lesbian Information Service. O'Brien, who will be shipping out to Iraq in December, said he was comforted by the fact that, should anything happen, my partner will be looked after. An ADF spokesperson was quoted in one press report that Defense places great emphasis on ensuring that its people work in an environment that is fair and inclusive, recognizing that this enhances operational capability and effectiveness. GLBT rights groups have seized on the report to demand more federal rights for same-gender couples. Openly gay former Senator Brian Gregg isn't so sure the ADF move is a done deal, however. He says the memo may be a planned leak by the conservative John Howard government, released discreetly as news late on a Friday to minimize media exposure and to see if there is any anti-gay backlash, allowing the government to scrap it swiftly with some excuse along the lines of, oh, this was only being looked at and wasn't being mandated. Stay tuned.
There was a non-protest of the Pentagon's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland this week. Defying earlier threats of arrest if they staged a protest, about 50 queer rights activists still managed to express opposition on campus to the 12-year-old policy that bans out gays and lesbians from U.S. military service. The event began with a few anxious moments as members of the group, each wearing a bright pastel t-shirt printed with the words Equality Ride, held hands along the brick wall outside the academy's main gate, and after a brief news conference, walked through single file. First in line, rally organizer Jacob Raytan was stopped by two Marine guards. One asked if he was there with the protest. "No, I'm not," Raytan said. "We're here to have a discussion and dialogue, and we're here like any other visitors to the academy." The group was then allowed in, and while midshipmen were in class, spent time strolling the grounds and visiting the campus bookstore and restaurant like other tourists of the facility. As classes let out, they lined up in the square outside the midshipmen's dormitory, Bancroft Hall, and shook hands with them as they walked by, and then left. "Everything ended peacefully," said Raytan. "We shook a lot of hands and introduced ourselves, and I think we left an indelible impression on a lot of people at the academy."
Gay and lesbian students in the California Pacific Coast community of Santa Cruz staged a kiss-in this week to protest Don't Ask, Don't Tell in front of Army, Navy, and Marine Corps recruiters at a job fair at the University of California campus there. The university said it could not bar military recruiters because of the Solomon Amendment, which allows the federal government to withhold funding to universities that deny the military access to campus recruitment. Protests were staged earlier this month as well at Stanford University and at the University of Iowa.
And lawmakers in St. Louis, Missouri, are also weighing in on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The city's Board of Aldermen unanimously approved a resolution this week, respectfully urging Congress to pass and the President to sign the Military Readiness Enhancement Act of 2005, which, among other things, would abolish Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Resolutions supporting that bill have also been approved by city councils in New York, Chicago, West Hollywood, San Francisco, and Cathedral City, California. In September, the California Assembly approved a similar resolution, making it the first and as yet only state legislative body in the country to officially oppose the military's ban.
Lesbian gay communities in England are on edge after the horrific murder of a young gay man in South London, a killing that has been called an unquestionably homophobic hate crime by authorities there. Jody Dabrowski, the 24-year-old manager of a bar in North London, was beaten and stopped so severely just after midnight on October 15th that he died at a local hospital a few hours later. Detective Chief Inspector Nick Scola said Dabrowski had suffered critical head, neck, and facial injuries. "This was a brutal attack," he said, "which left Jody's face so badly injured he could not be identified visually, even by those who knew and loved him the most." Dabrowski's fingerprints had to be used to make a formal identification. London Mayor Ken Livingstone labeled the attack shockingly vicious. Authorities have arrested two men in connection with the murder. Dabrowski was visiting friends in the blue-collar neighborhood of Clapham in South London and was on his way home when the attackers, shouting anti-gay slurs, chased him through the park at Clapham Common and assaulted him. Police say the attack was both abhorrent and frenzied. There are reportedly well over 100 bashings and a half dozen gay hate murders in London every year, but few have caught the attention of the public that the brutal killing of the popular Dabrowski has. Friends and family members visited the murder site and left flowers and other remembrances. Dabrowski's brother Jake read a statement that said, in part, "A beautiful and fine young man has been taken from us, and the people who did this will never understand the horror they have inflicted on his family and hundreds of friends."
In a case closely watched by both U.S. queer advocates and their opponents, the Kansas Supreme Court this week unanimously overturned a state law that punished underage gay sexual activity much more severely than similar heterosexual conduct. Matthew R. Limone has been serving a 17-year prison sentence since his conviction in 2000 of having what was never disputed to be consensual sex 1 week after his 18th birthday with a boy who was almost 15. In fact, according to the American Civil Liberties Union, 3 years, 1 month, and a few days younger. Had one of them been female, the state's Romeo and Juliet law would have prescribed a maximum sentence for Limone of 15 months. Kansas law makes any sexual activity involving a person under the age of 16 illegal. The Romeo and Juliet law, however, enacted in 1999, dictates brief jail terms or even probation for sexual activity when the defendant is under 19 and the age difference between participants is less than 4 years, but only for heterosexual activity. The 2003 Lawrence v. Texas case, in which the U.S. Supreme Court struck down all adult consensual sodomy laws, influenced the Kansas Supreme Court ruling. Justice Marla Luckert, writing for the state's high court, said the much harsher sentence given to Limone also suggests animus toward teenagers who engage in homosexual sex. Moral disapproval of a group cannot be a legitimate state interest. The statute inflicts immediate, continuing, and real injuries policies that outrun and belie any legitimate justification that may be claimed for it. We are very happy that Matthew will soon be getting out of prison, said Lamone's attorney James Essex of the American Civil Liberties Union's Lesbian and Gay Rights Project. We're sorry there is no way to make up the extra 4 years he spent in prison simply because he's gay.
What is billed as Europe's largest lesbian-gay festival, Glasgay, has kicked off a month-long series of events that will bring a fifth of its audience from outside Scotland to Glasgow. The four-week festival has grown dramatically from its beginnings as a political protest to its current offering of over 200 performances in 16 venues. Among the headliners this year are singers Mark Almond and Rufus Wainwright. Festival producer Stephen Thompson told reporters, "We have gone from a celebration of queer culture into the mainstream." City officials have said Glasgow not only promotes a positive image for the gay and lesbian community, but pours much-needed pink pounds into the economy there. At least one Scots businessman is having none of the festivities, however. Tom Forrest runs a 3-star bed and breakfast in the city of Wester Ross and is Scotland's most vocal opponent of a national law requiring guest houses and hotels to accept same-gender couples. Forrest hit the headlines several weeks ago when he refused a gay couple who had requested a double room, claiming that he would rather be jailed than to have someone tell him who is allowed under his roof. Forrest is clearly at odds with the National Tourist Authority, Visit Britain, which, while reporting a steady rise in complaints of hotel homophobia, has promoted Scotland as a queer holiday destination.
And finally, the American high school tradition of electing a homecoming king and queen has been a staunchly heterosexual ritual. The young man elected king is often the most popular, unquestionably hetero sports star, and the queen the prettiest and most popular cheerleader. But the students at Buffalo Grove High School in Chicago apparently decided to challenge tradition by electing Jen Wolner and Ryan Cooperman to those positions of honorary royalty this week. Yes, it's true that both Wolner and Cooperman are popular, and it's true that one is a jock and one is a cheerleader. But not only are both students openly queer, in fact, Jen went to her prom with another girl last year, it's Jen who's the jock and Ryan who's the cheerleader.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 22nd, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by John Beaupre and Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
So I walk a little...
Rita's gone and the show must go on. The Houston Women's Music Festival is rescheduled for Saturday, October 29th at Jones Plaza. Performers include Houston's favorite, Patrice Pike, the jazz funk fusion of Tamaris, and many more.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, I don't think that artist singing in the background is going to be at the festival, but that would be pretty cool. This is JD. We're back to Queer Voices. And coming up next is one of my favorite interviews of the year because it's talking about the Houston Women's Festival, which has the promo just said is this Saturday night, or this Saturday. But before we start yakking about it, I want you to get a chance to hear some of the music that you could hear there. I put together a collage of, six different artists who are going to be there, and it's about a little over 5 minutes, so let's enjoy the music first, and then we'll come back and get the details.
the sun beating on my back. The concrete is whispering to me, girl, you best not step on my cracks. The sounds of the city are pounding, and I'm trying to hear my thoughts, but too many are resounding. And they're all getting lost in the day, so I guess that I'll just
was a pretty stellar lineup. We're going to talk about the Houston Women's Festival, and we just heard a collage. I'll tell you in a moment who we heard, but let me introduce our guests. We have Jay Prudrett and Charmin Petri from the organizers of the festival. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, what is the Houston Women's Festival?
Actually, this is the 11th year that the Houston Women's Festival has been here. What we do is we support the artistic endeavor of women throughout Houston and abroad. So we have independent female performers that come out and play for us, and it's just a real fine gathering.
Has it always been? It's downtown, right? Has it always been there?
It was Garden of the Heights the first 8 years, and the last, including this year, the last 3 years, it's at Jones Plaza off of Louisiana.
Okay, and that's kind of like a little square area, like a not a park setting exactly, but they have a couple stages set up.
There's one big stage out there. It is an outdoor venue, and it's right downtown Houston where the theaters are all at.
Mm-hmm. Where do people park?
Underneath it. There is parking underneath. We do block off 3 blocks, so it's kind of first come, first serve. Of course, some of the vendors are there, and our sound folks and what have you. But there is parking, plenty of parking underneath Jones Plaza.
And there's also other theater parking areas. If you actually go to the City of Houston's website, or just do a search on Google for Houston theater parking, there it will direct you to a site that will tell you where all the parking is.
Okay. In the little collage I put together, we heard in order, if you were keeping track, I'm sure you were, we heard Meredith McRae, Tamaris, Holly Light, Michelle Mayfield, Susanna Schofield, and Patrice Pike. And let's talk about some of these folks. I've got another artist for the end of the segment that I like a lot, too. But let's talk about these folks. Well, first up on the lineup, on the schedule, is Mary Allen. I admit I don't know much about her.
Yes. Mary Allen is actually she's a local artist here from Houston. And she has drawn an extremely enthusiastic crowd over at Club Helios. She plays there every Tuesday night. In addition to that, she's also a professional studio musician who contributes her guitar work to various projects. She's written musicals that's being reviewed by producers out in L.A. And I think it's kind of funny anyway because she's real out there. She's very enthusiastic. But she actually has a degree in engineering, but she's chosen music as her field of choice.
She must love it.
She loves it.
I realize I gave the wrong first name for one of the artists.
Whitney.
It's Whitney McRae.
Yes, Whitney McRae.
Tell me about her.
Whitney is actually from New Orleans. She moved here to Houston about 6 months ago. A lot of folks probably remember her from, Proud Mary's. Proud Mary's out in New Orleans. And two of her songs, original songs from Clever Combination, were chosen among the top 500 songs in 2002. She's played with Sean Colvin, Pat Benatar, as well as Melissa Ferrick.
And the song Clever Combination, that's the one I picked to start the collage off. I like that.
Yes, yes.
That's good.
It's awesome. Whitney's very kind. She'll be playing at Bewitched Ball Friday night, the 28th, which is another
before.
Thing. Yes, the night before.
Then we have Michelle Mayfield.
Yes. Yes, Michelle's awesome. She, too, is from Austin, and her actions are a lot like her voice when it comes to being enthusiastic on stage. I saw her play when she had the flu and 102 fever, and she was jumping all over the place. She is just phenomenal. Her first CD was Matter of Time, which sold about 1,500 copies. And in 2004 and 2005, she was chosen Best of Austin Music List out in Austin for Best Performing Rock Band, Best New Band, and Best Female Vocalist.
Yeah, I consider her to be kind of a cross between Pat Benatar, Sheryl Crow, and Melissa Etheridge. She's got sort of all those elements.
Is she the rocker in the show?
She's one of the heavy rockers.
One of the heavy ones, yes.
Yeah.
I always like to ask that. Okay, who's going to rock the most?
She rocks. Yeah. Yeah, Mayfield rocks. Her voice, I mean, it's earthy, it's real. You know, she's just all about energy out there. Awesome stage presence.
And she'll be followed in the lineup by Holly Light.
Holly.
Yeah, Holly from Long Beach, California. I actually saw Holly, three or four years ago at a show here in Houston when she was a solo act. She had just come as a solo and just really had a whole lot of energy and really liked her a lot, talked to her a little bit. So, you know, she said she would be interested in, you know, coming back to Houston. And so when the opportunity arose, I had given her CD to, at that time, producer Shirley Knight. And Shirley agreed that, you know, she'd be a good asset to the festival.
You know, Holly, too, when we were rained out back in 2003, she was just so instrumental when it comes to assisting us. We had to move it over to Chances, which we'll do this year, but right. It's not going to rain this year.
Well, I moved to Chances rained. With it that year.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. We all did. That was interesting. But, Holly, I mean, she was just right there, and she helped us. She was really like a volunteer to the festival. She helped with the sound. She played an extra set.
Team
when
player.
We were, very much so. And she is as sweet as her music. Just wonderful.
After Holly is an artist I don't know at all, because she was kind of added at the last minute, Susanna Schofield.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Susanna, amazing, amazing talent. She has kind of an urban world beat with a jazz twist. She's only 25 years old, and she's already won the international as well as the John Lennon songwriting competitions. And that's a pretty big noise for such a young artist, I think. But I think people are really going to enjoy her. She's bringing her full band and just amazing, amazing sound. She has so many different influences. She used to be in a hip-hop band. She's got influences from Fiona Apple to even Sting. I mean, some of her music kind of reminds me of a female version of Sting, just with her unique vocal phrasing. So I think people are really going to see a fresh and new approach to just your basic singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm. And we got to move a little quicker now. We're yakking a little long on each one. Tamarus rhymes with glamorous, you said. She has, in my opinion, the most different sound of the group.
I would have to agree.
Tamarus, I mean, her guitarist, she's an explosive guitarist, honest lyrics, high energy performance, and honestly she expands her and her audience into new and exciting territories. We're looking forward to having her here. I know Shirley has tried to get her in the past, and you know, unfortunately there's always conflicting in schedules, but we're looking forward to seeing Tamarus here.
And Halcyon, we've seen Halcyon before.
You know, Halcyon, I don't know, you probably did look this up, JD, I'm sure you did. Halcyon, defined as golden, peaceful, prosperous, and happy.
I just know they're talented and funny.
And that's exactly it. But, I mean, you know, this kind of goes back, their name. And they felt that that definition in the dictionary described them, and I think so, too. They're awesome performers, a lot of energy. The audience absolutely adores them. And, you know, you just go out there and have fun.
Yeah, I interviewed them a couple of years ago, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The last one we have, we only have a couple of minutes left, is Patrice Pike, your headliner.
Yes.
And she's very well known in this area.
Yes.
She plays in Houston a lot.
She does. And, you know, we know her really from Sister Seven. She's performed on stage with Dave Matthews, Sarah McLachlan, Natalie Merchant, Allman Brothers. I mean, she sang the national anthem to a worldwide audience for JFK, the memorial. She is just, you know, she's all about rock, funk, soul, and blues. And her voice just attracts everyone.
Okay, let's sum it up for the listeners in case they dozed off. It's the Houston mm-hmm. Women's Festival. Where is it?
Jones Plaza, this Saturday, October 29th. Starts at noon, and it'll last till 10 p.m.
So it's all day.
All day.
And what else is there to do there?
Oh, gosh, we have vendors. We have several vendors that are going to be there. Jewelry, ice cream, travel, barbecue. We're going to have the Waste Management Harley Davidson that was donated through Jay Leno, which will be another interesting thing.
Where can folks find out more? Is there a website?
www.hwfestival.org.
And I'm sure if they contact that site, if they want to volunteer also.
Please, yes. We wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for our volunteers.
Okay. I want to thank our guests, Jay Pedrett, Sharman Petrie from the Houston Women's Festival, one of
thank
my
you,
favorite
sir.
Events. We're going to go out with Halcyon
yes.
with a very, very energetic song by them called The Joke's on Me.
You've been around me long enough to know, and now it's up to me, so I suppose I figure now what's wrong with you is wrong with me. The pieces of the puzzle scattered out, it doesn't do much to remove the doubt. The joke's on me. the joke's on me.
Again, from the upcoming Houston Women's Festival, that was Halcyon, so please stop by this Saturday and see them too.
This is Queer Voices.
Probably never heard of British aristocrats Peter Wildblood, Michael Pitt Rivers, and Edward Lord Montague. Wildblood, who's at the center of this story, was born in Italy in 1923, served in the Royal Air Force, read French at Oxford, wrote a play that got good reviews, and in the early 1950s helped set in motion the Wolfenden Report, which led to the repeal of laws against gay sex in Britain a decade later. It's a coming-out chronicle of sorts, but this one involves the British class system, J. Edgar Hoover, Scotland Yard, two Boy Scouts, two Royal Airmen, and the Cold War. Aided by a talented cast, Wellington, New Zealand producer Hugh Young begins the dramatic tale of Peter Wildblood and the Montague Affair.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me my Lord Montague of Bewley. On the second day of Christmas, my true love...
Peter Wildblood's father was a retired engineer minding an Italian tennis club when Peter was born. His mother was an Argentinian sheep rancher's daughter. They returned to London when he was three, and he was put in charge of a series of nannies who he hated. He was bullied at school and struggled to conform. At college, he worshipped the athletic gods who rode on the river, but since they wouldn't speak to him, he returned to his books, where he learnt from Plato or Proust or some commentary on Shakespeare that there were men who loved only men.
This did not strike me as strange. Indeed, it seemed perfectly reasonable. The physical perfection of an athlete had always appeared to be more beautiful than the body of a woman, and a man's mind more flexible and strong. Only a man could give me that feeling of protection against an unfriendly world for which I longed. A sentence in Plato's Symposium haunted me. An army of such lovers could conquer the world.
He enrolled for Oxford but didn't stay, joining the RAF instead and becoming a meteorologist in Rhodesia, now Zambia and Zimbabwe. He acquired a handsome moustache, a pet cheetah, and the title of Shinganga Wamfula, Wizard of the Rain. With 9 solid months of sunshine and 3 of rain, forecasting the weather in Rhodesia was a pushover. Suddenly the war ended and he was able to go straight back to Oxford, where he began to come to terms with his sexuality, even analysing the roots of homophobia, though the word would have to wait another 30 years.
A normally adjusted man is surprisingly tolerant. The scorn and the denunciations nearly always come from a man with more or less suppressed homosexual desires of his own.
He met a man he'd been at school with, who'd been a naval officer in Ceylon.
He said that most of the officers at the station had been gay, and he looked at me as though this were some password to which he expected me to reply. I had not heard the expression before, but apparently it was an American euphemism for homosexual. He was, of course, gay himself, and took it for granted that I was too. I was surprised and rather impressed. He did not look in the least like the popular idea of homosexual, being well-built, masculine, and neatly dressed. I had always been slightly repelled by the obvious homosexuals I'd met, because of their vanity, their affected manner, and their ceaseless chatter.
Just before he came down from Oxford, Wildblood had an affair with a minor European prince. That ended when he became involved with a woman who knew about his sexuality but didn't think it would matter. He got a job as a waiter and wrote in the evenings. He got a job in the Leeds district office of the Daily Mail, and after one of his stories hit the front page, he managed to be transferred to Fleet Street. Through his work on a gossip column, Wildblood made the acquaintance of Lord Montague of Bewley, who was working in a publicity agency. One of the reasons he liked Montague was that he was so free of snobbery, and this story is intimately connected with the threat open homosexuality poses to the British class system. One rainy night in Piccadilly Circus, Wildblood met RAF Corporal Eddie McNally. He was weak, effeminate, and everything Wildblood didn't admire. Intelligent, but uneducated, he blamed the ruling classes for everything he didn't have. Wildblood considered him an inverted snob. He insinuated himself into Wildblood's life, and a tense and passionate relationship grew between them. They entertained each other simply in Wildblood's Spartan South Kensington flat. And early in 1952, McNally suggested they spend their summer holidays together. Montague had offered Wildblood the use of a beach hut near the sea, without running water. Wildblood wanted to write, but not to be alone the whole time. Then Eddie wanted to bring an RAF friend, John Reynolds. The four met once at Montague's flat, so that Wildblood could meet Reynolds. The four went to the beach house near Southampton, and Montague brought down some sandwiches, wine, and some of his house guests. Wildblood says the party that followed was very dull. It was a cousin of Montague's, Michael Pitt Rivers, who suggested an escape to a folly on his family estate, consisting of a variety of buildings and a good museum. They stayed a week there. Wildblood had no inkling what was to come of it. Wildblood was too busy to see much of McNally after that, but in August 1953, Montague told him about a disturbing incident at Bewley. He'd gone with film director Kenneth Hume to the beach hut and taken two of the Boy Scouts who guided at his motor museum for a swim. An expensive camera had gone missing. He'd complained to the police, and the boys, when they were being questioned about it seemed, had complained of being indecently assaulted. A gay journalist heard the story and spread it far and wide. Lines appeared in the gossip columns. Where is Lord Montague? Montague's sister was about to get married. He had just become engaged and went abroad to avoid the rising tide of innuendo.
It seemed sometimes as though every pansy in London was telling Montague stories in a feverish attempt to divert suspicion from himself.
What Wildblood did not know was that the United States had advised Britain to weed out homosexuals as hopeless security risks from important government jobs. A Scotland Yard commander spent 3 months in the US consulting FBI officials on putting finishing touches to the plan. No doubt he met J. Edgar Hoover and his lover Clyde Tolson. Perhaps he even heard the stories about them, maybe even about Joe McCarthy, Roy Cohn and Cardinal Spellman. So some pansies in Washington were feverishly diverting suspicion from themselves, too. And the war on gay men and lesbians was intimately bound up with the Cold War. In Britain, diplomats Guy Burgess and Donald Maclean had defected to the USSR, and that too had a gay connection. And Sir John Knott Bower had taken over as Commissioner of Scotland Yard, and he had declared war on all homosexuals. The special branch compiled a black book of known gays. The first and more serious charge against Lord Montague was thrown out. The boys had obviously lied. A jury could not agree on a second, more minor, last-minute charge, even though it emerged at the first trial that the police had altered Montague's passport to make it look as though he was in England when he said he was in France. Between the trials, Wildblood wrote to Montague to wish him luck. He was rather disturbed to learn that McNally's family had found a letter of his, and McNally told two different stories about what had become of it. Wildblood decided to see no more of McNally.
Yes?
Are you Mr. Wildblood?
Yes.
We're police officers from the Hampshire Constabulary and from New Scotland Yard. We've come to arrest you, Wildblood, for offences arising out of your association with Edward McNally and John Reynolds in the summer of 1952.
One of the two was a superintendent who had been in charge of the Montague case. He ordered a search of the house, without mentioning a warrant, and wouldn't let Wildblood talk to his solicitor for an hour and a half.
The best thing is for you to make a statement. You just clear yourself. Don't bother too much about the others.
It was another 3 hours before Wildblood saw his lawyer, and in that time he was persuaded to make a statement, which told the truth about himself, but didn't implicate anyone else. He was taken to Hampshire to be charged along with Montague and Pitt Rivers, and again for the preliminary hearing before local magistrates. Wildblood, Montague and Pitt Rivers were tried in Winchester Castle, under a round tabletop hanging on the wall, reputed to be King Arthur's original. They tried in vain to ensure some women were on the jury. They were charged not only with committing indecent acts, but with conspiring to commit them. It was then that the chief feature of the case began to come out. Their breach of Britain's class system.
These two airmen are men of the lowest possible moral character. They were corrupted long before they met the defendants. They committed immoral acts under the seductive influence of the lavish hospitality bestowed on them by the defendants.
The lavish hospitality became a theme of the trials.
The cider had been transmuted, as though by a miracle, into champagne. The beach hut had become a gilded den of vice in which all male orgies went on until dawn. I became so fascinated that it was only with difficulty that I remembered that he was talking about me. At one moment, in order to mop his brow, he pulled a handkerchief from his coat pocket, dislodging a spare set of false teeth, which shot across the floor and landed, grinning, between my feet.
But farce changed to horror when McNally gave his evidence.
What came out, I swear, was not his own voice, but the voice of a policeman, drearily repeating in the official formulae the fantasies which formed the basis of the prosecution case. The transformation of McNally was complete, horrible, and pathetic.
It turned out that McNally had been interrogated for a total of 18 hours. He was told that Reynolds had already confessed, he was threatened with prosecution, then haled before a military court, and though he pleaded guilty, released without prejudice, rather like the mock executions used as a form of torture in Southeast Asia. Then he was told he would not be prosecuted if he turned Queen's evidence against Wildblood, Lord Montague and Pitt Rivers. He had implicated a total of 24 men, but only those three were ever charged.
These are witnesses who we, in law, know as accomplices. They were willing parties to these unnatural offences, although, of course, they were committed under the seductive influence of lavish hospitality from these men who were so infinitely their social superiors.
And then he read Wildblood's love letters to McNally.
It was cruel enough to have to listen to them. What made it even worse was the knowledge that these letters were not only being used as evidence against myself, but against Edward and Michael, who had not even known of their existence. It was horrible. I looked around the court. The jury and the people on the public benches sat with pinched mouths and clasped hands, looking at their shoes. The judge looked as though he had bitten a lemon. The sheriff's eyes were closed, the chaplain's popping. I wanted to get up and shout. It was not I who made love into a dirty word, it is you. Rawlingson probed and gouged McNally like a dentist drilling a rotten tooth. Out it all came. The truculence, the shaming, the squalid little affairs with half a dozen men, some of whose names he did not even know. When questioned about details, he became evasive. But on the main points he stood firm, repeating over and over and over again the incongruous words, Mr. Wildblood committed an offence against me.
The defence established that McNally had been on even more affectionate terms with someone called Jerry, calling him my husband, but that offence was never pursued. The aim was to get Montague. Whose aim? Well, Sir David Maxwell Fife was Home Secretary. It was he who'd let Timothy Evans hang for murders committed by serial killer John Christie and feeble-minded Derek Bentley hang for a shooting by a younger mate, which happened after Bentley had been arrested. Director of Public Prosecution Sir Theobald Matthew was keen to get Montague and give up McNally and Reynolds in order to do so. Matthew came to watch the three be sentenced. Reynolds was a worse witness than McNally. His evidence was so confused and contradictory that the four main charges against Montague had to be dropped. Wildblood gave evidence about his arrest, and as a result, his statement was declared inadmissible. He was called again to describe his relationship with McNally. It is probably an historic moment that on a March day in 1954, Peter Wildblood stood in the dock of an English courtroom and said, in the terminology of the day, I am an invert.
It is a feature, is it not, that inverts or perverts seek their love associates in a different walk of life than their own?
I have never heard any suggestion that that is the ordinary rule.
I mean, for instance, McNally was infinitely, he is none the worse for it, but infinitely your social inferior.
Nobody ever flung it at me during the war that I was associated with people who were infinitely my social inferiors.
Shortly after Wildblood was arrested, the Church of England issued an interim report called The Problem of Homosexuality. It said homosexual acts were no more sinful than others, such as adultery, opposed the law, and warned against persecution. Wildblood was cheered up by a taxi driver who had taken him to court, undeterred by crowds and flashbulbs.
Personally, and speaking man to man, I think it's a lot of bleeding nonsense. If two blokes want to carry on like that, and don't do no harm to no one, what business is it of anyone else's?
Next time, I'll tell you about the imprisonment of Peter Wildblood and Lord Montague, and how the law was changed.
6 convicted vicars, 5 queer choir boys.
This program was prepared and presented by Hugh Young. The part of Peter Wildblood was played by John Jolliffe, other parts by Chris Parkin and John Boyd.
Four virgin maids, 3 girl guides, 2 boy scouts, and my Lord Montague of Bewley.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Lucia Chappell, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Hugh Young contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air, to sign up for our monthly emailed This Way Out updates, and or to get our weekly program information messages, please email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WRUV Burlington, Vermont, 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, KRCL Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody, stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy.
is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and tonight I'm bringing you a very different show. I'm calling it Queer Girl Group Songs, and what I'm referring to are cover versions of those wonderful girl group songs of the 60s, done with a very gay twist. And I opened the show with a perfect example. That was the fabulous Dyketones turning the Chiffons' hit, He's So Fine, into their own version, She's So Fine. Ah, the difference those pronouns can make. I've got a show packed full of songs like that, and a good many of them were by straight artists, like this one by Brian Ferry.
Still, do run, 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 do run, run. Somebody told me his name was Bill. Do run, 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 do run, run. Yeah, my heart stood still. Yeah, his name was Bill. Yeah, when he walked me home. Do run, 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 do run, run. He knew what he was doing when he caught my eye. Do run, 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 do run, run. He looks so quiet, but my oh my. Do run, 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 do run, run. Yeah, he caught my eye. Yeah, but my oh my. Yeah, when he walked me home. Do run, 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 do run, run.
He picked me up the Sunday and he looked so fine.
Do run, 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 do run, run.
One day soon I'm gonna make you mine.
Do run, 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 do run, run. Yeah, he looks so fine. Yeah, I'm gonna make him mine. Yeah, when he walked me home. Do run, 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 do run, run. Do run, 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 do run, run. Do run, 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 do run, run. Do run, 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 do run, run.
That started out with Brian Ferry of Roxy Music, being faithful to the original lyrics of the Leslie Gore smash hit, It's My Party. He recorded that in 1990 on his album These Foolish Things. And after that was The Crystals' To Do Run Run, as done by another English artist, Ian Matthews. Matthews may also be known for his work with Fairport Convention and Matthews Southern Comfort, but that song came from a solo album in 1972 called Tigers Will Survive. A little background into my interest in this subject. Before I became a fanatical collector of recordings by gay and lesbian artists, I was a fanatical collector of girl group records of the 60s. So, of course, that fascination held whenever I came upon one of the old girl group songs done from a gay point of view. I've been meaning to do a show on this subject ever since my first year of doing Queer Music Heritage. I've had a list of ideas for shows, and this one has been on it since the beginning, but I never seem to get around to actually doing it. So this is the time, and it's been over 5 years in the making. Anyway, back to the music, and I won't be interrupting it very much during this show, but I will say that I'm being very liberal in my definition of what is a girl group song, as I feel that genre goes beyond those songs being done just by groups. So I'm going to include gay cover versions of songs by solo artists like Leslie Gore and Connie Francis. In the background, you've been hearing a little of the Teddy Bears hit, To Know Him Is to Love Him, as done in 1982 by the English group The Flying Pickets. But I think a much more interesting version was done by one of my favorite gay acts, The Flirtations. They took a little liberty with the lyrics.
To know him is to love him. Just to see him smile makes my life worthwhile. To know him is to love him. And I do.
And I do.
Everyone says there'll come a day when I'll walk alongside of him. Yes, just to know him is to love him.
And I do.
Ever need me, call me. No matter where you are, no matter how far, just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. On that you can depend and never, ever worry. And if you should ever get caught short of life's desires, remember, life holds for you one guarantee. You'll always have me. No wind, no rain, no winter's cold.
That was The Flirtations doing To Know Him Is to Love Him from their debut album from 1990.
bum-bum-doo. Spring is here and my domestic partner is too. Whoa, 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 we'll put a sign that says just married on our Subaru. We'll say I can't because we can't say I do. At a wedding ceremony worth manure. Going to the chapel, but we cannot get married. From Vermont to Minneapolis, no, we cannot get married. Gee, I really love you, but we cannot get married. Locked out of the chapel of love. Bells may ring and the sun may shine. Whoa, whoa, whoa. The 1,000 tax breaks will never be mine, no. And when I hold you close in half the states, it's a crime. Don't confuse matrimony and love. Don't ask, don't tell an apple is you wanna get married. Teeth your vinegar and papal is to keep us from getting married. Gee, I really love you, but we cannot get married. Locked out of the chapel of love. Down in the Big Apple, no, we cannot get married. Clearly nowhere on the map, let us legally get married. Gee, I really love you, but we still cannot get married. Locked out of the chapel of love. Whoa, 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 whoa. Until people grapple with
I just love the Kinsey Six version of that song called Locked Out of the Chapel of Love, done this time with very updated and political lyrics from their 2002 album, Six in the City. Up next is a very obscure gay trio from San Francisco from around 1978. The group Buena Vista only released 145, which included a song called He's Okay. They sang that song in the groundbreaking gay documentary from that time called Word Is Out. The film also showed a clip of them singing this unreleased version of the girl group classic, He's a Rebel.
Who got to do a little audience participation?
Now, I guess it is logical that most of the queer-sounding cover versions of girl group songs were done by men, as that gives you the switch pronouns. But here's one where a female group does their own thing, delightfully so, with the Shirelles song, I Met Him on a Sunday. The group is called the Rhythm Method. And I also think it's neat that they changed Papa Do Rondi Rondi to Mama Do Rondi Rondi.
Crush on her on Monday. Whoa. We played softball on Tuesday. Whoa. And traded stories about our therapists on Wednesday. Whoa. I moved in with her on Thursday. But I felt like she was really distancing herself from me on Friday. Whoa. And by Saturday, there was all of this, you know, passive-aggressive hostility stuff going on. And frankly, at that point, I felt like my needs really weren't being addressed anymore. So I said, bye-bye, baby.
Do run, de run, de run, de run, de mama. Do run, de run, de run, de run, de mama. Do run, de run, de run, de run, de mama. Do. Whoa.
Well, I saw her dancing on Sunday. Whoa. I fumed about it all day Monday. Whoa. Wouldn't you know it? We had to play softball again on Tuesday. Whoa.
But I was over it. I mean, it talked wasn't a mother, big deal. My therapist friend was making a lot of really good progress about it. I was over her on Wednesday. Whoa.
I bought a self-help book on Thursday. Whoa. I dated the bookstore clerk on Friday. Whoa. My self-esteem was back on Saturday.
Do run, de run, de run, de run, de mama. Do run, de run, de run, de run, de mama. Do run, de run, de run, de run, de mama. Do. Whoa.
Birds of a feather we
Rhythm Method's song came from their 1994 self-titled recording. Following it was an obscure duo from Arizona coined by the delightful name of Women in Comfortable Shoes. Their version of My Guy, renamed, of course, My Dyke, was on their 1992 cassette, Soul Searching. Next up are a couple of cover versions done in punk rock style.
He walked up to me and he asked me if I wanted a dance. He looked kind of nice and so I said I might take a chance.
Thank you.
Those were a couple of probably straight punk groups. First was the Hollywood Brats doing the Crystals song, Then He Kissed Me, from 1979. And that version of the Angels' classic, My Boyfriend's Back, came from an album called Blow in the Wind, and done by a recent group called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, who specialize in doing punk versions of just all kinds of songs, and have released a number of albums. You should hear them do Over the Rainbow. Okay, I just played My Boyfriend's Back, and by my calculations, that song is the girl group song that has had more gay cover versions than any other song. I have 6 different versions, and they are all different, such as this one by Monica Grant that has a bisexual twist.
You hung around and slept with me every night. When I said I wouldn't commit to you, you said some things that weren't very nice. You said my boyfriend's back and I'm gonna be bisexual.
Hey la, hey la, my boyfriend's back.
He's coming back, better take home all your dildos.
Hey la, hey la, my boyfriend's back.
You say you've been hurt, well that's just a tale.
Hey la, hey la, my boyfriend's back.
Well, look out now, cause I'm growing back my nails.
Hey la,
Monica Grant's song came from her 1995 album, Paradisiac. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along by looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Now, I really enjoyed putting together this show of very gay girl group cover songs, and I've got quite a few more excellent songs that could not fit into an hour show. So I decided to go all out and feature them all on the internet version of my show. So you can hear almost 3 hours of this programming at my website. And again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carver every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. As a collector, one of my favorite ways of discovering what I call accidentally gay songs are to find a demo version of a song, usually sung by the composer as a means of enticing an artist to record the song. As it was never intended for broadcast, the gender of the singer didn't matter. It was just demonstrating the song. I've got Two I Love by Neil Sedaka that fits this description, and both were recorded by Connie Francis. The first ended up as a nice album track for her in 1961. But I think Neil's version is much more interesting. It's called My Best Friend Barbara.
I told my best friend Barbara what a great guy Jimmy was.
whoever thought the day would come when Jimmy would be hers? My best friend Barbara told me Jimmy's no good, and like a fool I listened to her the way she knew I would. My best friend Barbara. My best friend Barbara said he cheats and he lies. She couldn't wait for me to break up with him. Now Jimmy's Barbara's guy. My best friend Barbara. Look at her, hanging on his arm, trying very hard to please. There's a moral to the story, but friends like her
don't need enemies.
My best friend Barbara, she's going steady with Jim. And every single night I sit home and cry while Barbara's kissing him. My best friend Barbara. Look at
that have been cool on the radio back then? But not as cool as this next one. Around 1967, a group called The Happenings had several hits like See You in September, Go Away Little Girl, and I've Got Rhythm. Neil probably pitched to the Tokens, who were the producers of The Happenings, a song copying their style for possibly a female version of the group. That never happened, but we're left with Neil's priceless rendition of the Connie Francis hit Where the Boys Are. I just love that one, and we'll hear another version of that song later. And here's another song that almost works. See if you can tell why it doesn't. Okay, I cheated on that one. That obscure group was the Montells, a real girl group from 1964. And I played you their 45 at a speed of about 38 RPM. But wouldn't it have been neat for a male doo-wop group to have recorded a song called Someday My Prince Will Come? This next song, if it's not the gayest, it's certainly the campiest cover version. It's from a very rare 45 from 1980, and whoever named the act definitely had tongue-in-cheek and other places. Here are the Bee Gees.
He went away and you hung around and bothered me every night. I wouldn't go out with you. You said some things that just weren't very nice. My boyfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble. See him coming, better head out on the double.
Hey, Lord, my boyfriend.
You've been spreading the filth that I was untrue.
Hey, Lord, my boyfriend.
So look out now, baby, because he's coming after you.
Hey, Lord, my boyfriend.
He knows what you've been trying. Soon we'll be K1. He's been gone for such a long time. But now he's back and things will be divine. You're gonna be sorry you were ever born. Cause he's kind of big and he's magnificently strong. He knows I wasn't cheating. As a result, you're gonna take a beating. You're a big boy now, but he'll cut you down to size. I hate you. I hate you and all your despicable lies. My boyfriend's back. He's gonna save my reputation.
Hey, Lord, my boyfriend's back.
So why did you leave like yesterday on your permanent vacation?
Hey, Lord, my boyfriend's back.
I can see him coming. So you'd really better get on your Adidas and start running. You're a big boy now, but it'll cut you down to size. Cause like me, he detests your guts and all your hateful lies. My boyfriend's back, there's gonna be such a lot of trouble. My boyfriend's back, yeah, 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 yeah. My boyfriend's back, yeah, 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 yeah. My boyfriend's back, yeah, 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 yeah. God, I hate you. I hate you. You're such a disgusting. God, here he comes now. Hi, hi. Come quickly. I'm thrilled. Who are you? Can you believe this now? Bah, doesn't feel like a human being again.
Up next are a trio of songs from England that rate very high on the camp scale. Some of you who watch the BBC may have heard of Julian Clary, a comedian who had a TV game show for a number of years, but the show was unbelievably gay and even included him singing. Some of the shows are out on video, and from one of them I took the Mary Wells song, My Guy. Since there was a studio audience, you'll hear a little laughter.
There's nothing you could do could tear me away from my guy.
My guy.
There's nothing you can do, cause I'm stuck like glue to my guy.
My guy.
I'm sticking to my guy like a stamp to a letter. Like birds of a feather, we stick together. I'm telling you from the start, I can't be torn apart from my guy. There's nothing you can do could make me untrue to my guy. There's nothing you can buy could make me tell a lie to my guy.
My guy.
I gave my guy my word of honor to be faithful. And I'm probably going to be
you. Yes, even in
I won't be deceiving my guy. As a matter of opinion, I think he's tops. My opinion is he's the cream of the crop. as a matter of taste, to be exact. He's my ideal as a matter of fact.
No muscle bound man could take my hand from my God. My God,
no handsome face could ever take the place of my God.
My God,
he may not be a movie star, but when it comes to being happy, there's no man who could tear me away from my God. Duncan, perhaps. Who could tear me away from my God? Lois of rugby team. Or is anyone you care to mention could tear me away from my God?
My God.
That's from Julian Clary's video called My Glittering Passage from 1993. Now, this next song by him is one of my favorites from this whole show. He released the song in 1988 as a 45 under a different and very campy name. Here's the Joan Collins Fan Club and Leader of the Pack.
Is he really going out with him?
There he is. Let's ask him.
Julian, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
No, it's not. It's my ring.
Gee, it must be great riding with him.
Is he picking you up after school today? No, I don't go to school anymore. I'm 28 now.
By the way, where'd you meet him?
I met him at the candy store. He turned around and smiled at me. You get the picture?
Yes, we see.
That's when I fell
for the leader of the pack.
My folks were always putting him down.
Down, down.
They told me he came from the wrong side of town. What's the right side? They told me he was bad. But I knew that he was just sad. I knew because that's why I fell
for the leader of the pack.
One day my dad said, find somebody new.
You,
so I had to tell my Jimmy that it's all over and we were through.
Thank you.
just love that. Now, this next one, also from the UK, is very obscure. It's from 1977 and was probably the only release by a group called The Roadies. Instead of Leader of the Pack, they're doing one called Packer of the Leads.
Hi, Gladys. Is that your new boyfriend?
And he's ugly. Where'd you meet him?
I met him by a transit van. He was the roadie with a rockin' band. That's why they call him the Packer of the Leads. The band were always putting him down. They said feedback must be his favorite sound. Drive. I knew I loved him, the Packer of the Leads. I recall the day my baby saw stars. It was the day he forgot to bring the guitars. He flew through the air in his Osmond's vest. And when he landed on the mixing desk, the Packer of the Leads.
But then one night we were saying goodbye to each other in our usual place, under the van. A policeman came up and said, "What are you doing?" My baby was real quick. He said, "We're men in the clutch." The policeman said, "Well, he'd better fix the brakes as well, because the van's rolling down the hill."
Heard my baby's gonna be alright.
Alright.
The band started working on a new TV series last night. Now everything is gonna be okay, 'cause they don't use guitar leads anyway. I knew he'd make it, the Packer of the Leads.
Again, that was Packer of the Leads by the Roadies. Now I've got one more song to share with you, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to thank my friend David Young in Seattle for his assistance. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com, and I wish you would. My website, of course, is at www.queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. I'm closing the show with a song by one of my favorite gay artists, Michael Callan. I've often said that I thought he should be sainted. He was diagnosed with AIDS in 1982, and it's hard to believe he accomplished so much in the 11 years until his death in 1993, at age 38. He became a leading AIDS activist and was one of the founders of the People with AIDS Coalition. And through all his writing and speaking, he remained devoted to his music. He released his first album, Purple Heart, in 1988, and that same year the Flirtations were formed. The group toured nationally and released two albums and appeared in the movie Philadelphia. And the music, as you heard early in the show, was excellent and very out. His version of this last song, I think, is a masterpiece, and you'll see how long he can hold a note. Michael Callan and Where the Boys Are.
Smiling.
listening to J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, a feature presentation of Queer Voices. Queer Voices is heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For
the free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.